I just really had this feeling in me that it was something I needed to see through, and no one would have blamed me if I stopped then. Like you're 16, you broke both of your feet. Sure, that's okay. You can stop, but I knew it was something to keep going through, and the way that that has been able to be used for so much more good in the future has just uncovered itself so much throughout the years. Like, I had the feeling, I know I should keep doing this, but then to see it come full circle in a lot of different ways, and then being able to be that mentor, be that voice for other people, is the reminder of why I stayed in the fight, and then also why I want to continue to do so now when I face challenges.
Hello, podcast world. Welcome to episode 114 of Run Chats with Ron Runs NYC. Meet Anna Rohr, former 8-time All-American for Notre Dame, 5-time high school national champion, whose running has been on fire of late. In the Boston Marathon, Anna finished first among the masses, clocking a sensational time of 2:30:52. A personal best of nearly 6 minutes, and placed 22nd overall. Just 19 days later, she shattered the course record and achieved a new PR of 1:11:31, winning the One America 500 Festival Mini Marathon in Indy, all while receiving tremendous local support. After graduating in 2020, Anna transitioned to professional running and joined the BAA's high performance team. However, recurring back pain compelled her to take a break from the team, focusing on allowing her mind and body to heal. During this time, she worked on training by effort, avoiding the track, and rediscovering the joy in her running. Collaborating with local physical therapists, Anna realized she was overly relying on her hamstrings and lower back, prompting her to rewire her movement patterns and engage her glutes more effectively. Anna's stay-in-the-fight moment. Not even 2 broken feet and being in a wheelchair part of her junior year of high school could stop her from coming back and winning her second Foot Locker championship. I just really had this feeling in me that it was something I needed to see through. The way it has been able to be used for so much good in the future has just uncovered itself so much throughout the years. To see it come like full circle in a lot of different ways, and then years down the road of being able to be that mentor, to be that voice for other people, is the reminder of why I stayed in the fight. And then also why I want to continue to do so now when I face challenges. Anna's unwavering determination and sense of purpose guided her through difficult times, and she now sees the value in using her experiences to inspire and mentor others as a mindset coach. Anna's story is a testament to the power of perseverance and staying in the fight as she continues to overcome challenges and inspire others along the way. Follow her journey and join the conversation with Stay in the Fight and Run Chats with Ron Runs NYC. Hope you all enjoy the listen. Welcome to Run Chats with Ron Runs NYC. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great, Ron. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing okay, man. I was just having some tech challenges, which we're laughing about. But, the podcaster that can't get his microphone and audio recording equipment to work, that's always a little sketchy, a little dodgy, but we got it all lined up now. So
I wouldn't have known if you didn't tell me.
Yeah. Hey, listen, we're all living the Zoom life or the Teams life, whatever your platform is that you work with. Outside of your running life and your running world, you do a lot of coaching for other runners, and then you do your business side. So you're probably on the screen as much or more than I am these days, right?
It is quite a bit. Yeah, it adds up.
Yeah. Are you a Teams person or a Zoom person?
I am Zoom. Yeah. Teams. Whenever I try to use Teams, it throws me off a lot. I feel like I don't know how to work it.
Got it. Yeah. The navigation's a little different if you're sharing documents or files or whatever. They are a little bit tricky and a little bit different. But anyway, let's get rolling. Man, you've been having some amazing results recently. Running 2:30:52 in Boston, not in the pro field. So that had to be an amazing experience. to be starting with the amateurs with a red bib with the 617 area code bib number, which is pretty cool. You had to get all kinds of crazy love from the Bostonians just from that. And then you followed it up running just 19 days later, the Indy half, running 111.31, winning the race, man. That's pretty amazing stuff. So you got to be like feeling pretty pumped up right now, right?
Yeah. Honestly, it's definitely the feeling of being pumped up, but at the same time, it's, I don't know, maybe like a humbling feeling too, because I've had so many ups and downs that to just be able to get back and like have some good races, it's been quite a while since I've gotten to do that. It, not to say I didn't have good races in college, but I didn't have many where I was like, oh, this is an awesome PR, and the type of crowd that you get at Boston and in Indianapolis. So it was, it was awesome. I'm excited to keep going with some more races now.
Yeah. You want to keep the mojo going, keep the momentum going, right? For sure.
For sure. Yeah.
And let's just say, as far as running resumes go, I'll just read off a couple of your highlights, because we could be on for about 30 minutes if I go all the way through. But 5-time high school national champ, national cross country runner of the year, 8-time NCAA All-American. That's pretty amazing stuff. Ran for Notre Dame, Fighting Irish, Go Irish. It's just incredible. But along with the amazing results that you put up as a high school runner, a collegiate runner, yeah, you did definitely battle your share of injuries. And man, you've learned an awful lot. And you're coaching runners yourself. You're coaching like a lot of high school age runners too right now, outside of your own running, and trying to help them. And I just think that's really, really cool. But I don't know, maybe we'll just save that for like later on, and we'll focus on your own running for now, because I just think it's really neat. I love people that are focused on giving back or doing something specifically. But, you know, to get into an area where you had struggled with yourself and maybe didn't really have anybody who had the knowledge in those areas or the background, and for you to be like looking out for that younger group of runners, I just think that's super cool. So I want to make sure we get a chance to really highlight that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're spot on. It is that the heart of it is just wanting to give back for what I could have used when I was that age.
Yeah. Well, look, so much has changed on the nutrition front, on, you know, basic companies like Inside Tracker that didn't even exist, that could provide us with such meaningful data, you know, at the blood level, hormonal level, just so many different levels. And, you know, how coaches, you know, talk to athletes about how much they weighed and how much they should weigh or what they should look like, or even what people may have felt, you know, that pressure, hey, I'm a scholarship runner, I'm supposed to look this way or supposed to do this. And then in certain cases, certainly many coaches have been guilty of that and been let go, and that stuff's come out, where that kind of pressure was put on runners. And not, it's obviously not just running. I mean, it's in swimming, it's in gymnastics, and so many other sports where athletes are earning scholarships. And it's just, it's a shame that so much of that went on, but it's still present today. And it may not be as, it's not just, maybe not quite as pervasive, but it's in all sports, period. And it's Instagram, it's Facebook. People want to look good. They want to post things about themselves that make them look good. So sometimes to look that way or get that kind of presence about themselves, maybe they're not doing things that are necessarily good for their long-term health either, right?
Right. Yep. Absolutely. I fully agree with that one.
Good deal. Good deal. So what do you think? I know you're coaching yourself, which is super cool. What do you think was a key for you starting to figure out, you know, because you had a bunch of injuries that you had to work through and figure out, along with the amazing running that you did, you know, on the collegiate level. But, you know, when you first started out in Boston, you were running professionally, like with BAA, right? That was the group that you were with and training with, right?
Yes.
And you were having, was it mostly back stuff, or like, I know probably some stress fractures are almost always mixed in there for anybody. Was it mostly back things that were really you were battling the most?
Yeah, it was the back. I luckily haven't had much issues with stress fractures since high school, but yeah, it was mostly back.
And so you took some time and just kind of let things play out a little bit, if you will, and, you know, made a decision to step away, right? You moved physically, left the group, got yourself resettled, and just kind of did a reset in your running, just took, it down in terms of what mileage or just your approach or how you were training or just stopped racing? Or was it a mixture of kind of all of those things before you really found yourself feeling like healthy again and eager to say, let's see what Anna can do. Let's get out there and do some races.
Yeah, it was a good mix of all that, I would say. Really, when I left, I just did not put a timeline on anything. I met with a neurosurgeon back in Indiana that I had met with in college too, and just talked it out with him on like, hey, what, this keeps happening and what can we do to fix it? Can we fix it at all? And came down to really, yeah, you can do surgery, but it's probably like the odds of it actually changing the pain and stuff are pretty low. So it's like, all right, you know what? I'm going to go a different route. And it wasn't like end of the world. Oh my gosh, I'm never going to run again. It was more so just, let's just step away for a bit. And I think there's a right approach out there. I just haven't found it yet. So I took some time away, just really not focusing on running. I don't remember how much time I took, like just no running at all, but really until I felt like I didn't have any pain. And so however long that took, I mean, I think it was within a couple months, and didn't think of like when I would race again. It was just kind of whenever it comes back, whenever I want to do it again. And as I was changing my training, I was just tapping into the focus on enjoying it. And I know if that's most important to me, like if I could never race again, you know, so be it. I would like to like continue at least running in and of itself. So it's like, all right, let's just focus on that. Just like actually time on the feet, feeling good. And then whenever I feel like racing, then we'll start to think about it. And that came earlier than I was expecting that I would want to race again. So it was November. It was like a Thanksgiving Day race was the first one that I raced back, which was a blast. It was like 4.6 miles or something. So I couldn't compare it to anything I'd done before. Hadn't raced in 2 years. So it ended up going really well though, was what was wild. And that kind of sparked it in me to realize I've caught on to something where I feel good and I'm really enjoying it. And I'm actually still running really fast. And so then I started just experimenting with what my body could handle and building from there, ran my first half marathon and full marathon in 2022, and then had my sights set on Boston.
That sounds like a terrific reset and just like going by feel a lot and just kind of waiting until it truly felt like, hey, I'm healthy again, you know, physically, because anyone who's had injuries of any kind and stress fractures, sure, almost every pro runner that's been on here has had a multitude of them. So whether they were from their high school or collegiate days, or even now as professionals continuing, you know, because trying to get the mileage to a certain point, trying to get to a new PR, trying to maybe earn a sponsorship, or all of those things maybe together that say, I need to do this because I, you know, I'm not a lawyer right now, or I'm not teaching anymore, which I studied for. I'm trying to make it as a pro runner. And man, that pressure is hard.
Yeah. And I think that has been what's been so big in my success is that when you're training in high school, in college, and professionally, when there is something that depends, someone or something that depends on it or on you, or you're dependent on a paycheck, it's really hard to take a day off. It's really hard to say, like, you know, I'm not recovered today. I shouldn't do this workout. But when you have a whole team doing it and you feel like you're behind if you don't, or there's this race you have to be in for the team. And, you know, I love college running and high school running. It was fantastic. But being able to say, like, I know I shouldn't do this today and it's okay. It doesn't matter to anyone else. It's easier to stop. And that's what's helped me actually stay healthy and then run faster because I'm giving my body the time it needs.
Yeah, those are some great lessons learned. And hopefully other runners that are in your level that have run an incredibly high level collegiately and trying to chase the pro ranks right now, or maybe are in the pro ranks right now, but maybe aren't hitting their full stride yet, or struggling to stay healthy. And it's tough to earn a living, man. It's a tough way to earn a living. Even when you're sponsored, the deals are structured in such a way that unless you're really winning some major races, it's really tough. And it is hard work, man. It is hard to train. I don't care if you're not working at all. Running is a lot of work. And staying healthy as a runner is a lot of work because there's so much that goes into it. And I know that to get into this healthier state, you changed maybe your approach to training, the way you just explained being able to pass on races because you don't have that pressure of being part of a team framework or maybe by being coached by a group or being part of, let's say, a running group or an elite running group where, hey, the expectation is you're going to run the BAA 10K, you're going to throw the singlet on, and you're going to run for us. But I think you clearly have made other changes too, like strength training, other things like that. What else have you learned in that regard that's kind of also helped solidify, you know, your current state and how you feel physically?
Yeah, so no major changes in the past few years for strength training, but the difference is what has accumulated over time. Because to keep the back healthy, it was some of my injuries stem from like improper muscle firing patterns. So when you run, you're supposed to use your glutes primarily to push yourself forward. And somewhere along the line, my muscle firing shifted to use mostly my back and my hamstrings. And so it was a big focus of just training the mind really to change that and then strengthen my glutes, strengthen like to protect the low back. You have to have a really strong core, really strong, like the tiny core muscles, the low back and everything. So I wouldn't say I've really been doing the same variation of what I've done for years, but it's just that I think it's just over time finally accumulated to get me to where I need to be. And then also I have actually where I live now in Indianapolis, some of the doctors and trainers that I worked with since high school, since I had those really bad foot injuries, they're in this area. It's like a 5-minute drive for me. Now it's summertime. Now I can bike there, but they have been monumental in helping me find the small weaknesses. Because it's always like, you know, if you have pain somewhere, it's usually because something else is wrong. So, for example, I had an issue where my hip would get out of place this was just last month. And I do these correction exercises and it would get back in place. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, I was in the same spot. So working with them, that's just one example. But they've helped me find those small weaknesses so that I can literally just show up and actually run mostly 7 days a week. You know, there's a day off here or there, a cross train day or something, but that's not something I was able to do for a very long time. And they've helped me just find the little imbalances to just keep me being able to be consistent. The consistency is a huge, huge key to what I've been able to do.
Yeah. The more consistent you can be, the more you can unlock your true potential. Any of us can. And staying healthy is always hard. But having regular practitioners that know you and have worked on you before, that's also comfort. So they know you, they know everything about you as a person. But also like on the biomechanics side, did you figure out, you know, not using your glutes enough? Did you figure it out from like slow frame by frame analysis on like treadmill run type of stuff? Or did you just had to figure it out on feel on the roads yourself that you weren't firing enough from there? Because that is a huge piece. And it's something I'm real interested in myself, because as my body's gotten older, as I have some injuries I never had before, I know when I talk about in the show, it all starts from the ground up, right? So you're talking about your feet, your ankles, your being able to balance on each leg, how your hips can drop if your core isn't strong enough. And then all of those things put more stress on everything, whether it's an ankle, a shin, a bone, something else. And then the next thing you know, we're sidelined. So how did you initially figure that piece out about not getting the glutes to fire enough, let's say?
Yeah. So it is a muscle test that you can do. So as one of the athletic trainers I worked with, when my back was pretty flared up, because like I said, I was using my hamstrings and my back together to push forward instead of my glutes primarily. So it's like, think about a low back injury, a bulging disc, your nerves are right there and getting pinched. And then every step you take, it's like pounding and pounding. And so it would lead to a problem pretty quickly. So it was initially back pain and then hamstring pain. My hamstrings were just chronically tight up high and I couldn't figure it out. So, hey, I mean, this trainer I worked with, they're so good. They're like USATF guys, very experienced, but I mean, it probably took him 5 minutes to, he just had me lay down on the table, did all these different tests and mobility. And then I laid on my stomach and he said, raise your leg. And he could tell right away, like the glutes were firing last, and then gave me all these exercises to practice engaging the glutes and everything. And it was really just training the mind to change the way you run, which is not easy, but I had to do it before for my foot issues, and it can be done. So I'm incredibly grateful for them.
Hey, that's powerful stuff. And those exercises, those triggers, they're physical things to do, but you're right. Mentally, the thought has to be there, like that it needs to be firing from here. And luckily for me, I've never had a really bad back injury, but I know how debilitating that can be. Forget about even if you're an athlete or not, just anything, just getting up, getting out of bed, driving in a car, everything can be just incredibly painful and put you into a pretty bad mood quickly. And it can't be any fun running if the first couple of strides you're into it, you're already feeling pain in a spot like that. You know your body is now immediately probably making all sorts of micro adjustments just so you can keep going in the run. So it's amazing that you were going through that and running at the level that you were at in college and even post-collegiately and have now kind of come out on the other side. So this is a pretty powerful story.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. It's like I said, it's really been these past few races have just been more so the feeling of like gratitude than excitement, because it's just been so long to get to this point and have a personal best and not have injury for a while and stuff. And that, yeah, it's a process for whatever goals you have, you're going to have ups and downs. But it's like, if you can keep going, There's a lot of exciting things in store.
Yeah, for sure. So tell us about Boston. It had to be a very different feeling. So you were starting, you know, I'm sure in the first corral, I saw your bib number 617 red bib. So, but obviously not with the elite men and women in that start. So that's a different feeling. But was it weird, strange? Like, what did it feel like? I mean, come on, you competed at the highest level collegiately, running a ton of national championship races. So you're used to being in that kind of separate elite pro group all the time. I mean, did it feel like weird, strange, more relaxed? What were some of the feelings you had, you know, just being in the mainstream corral with all the other runners around you?
Yeah. So luckily I was in the first part of the first corral. So I wasn't like, I mean, they block off like the whole street for, so you know, it's very, there's a lot of people like crammed together. So I was luckily at least at the front of that. But when I registered for Boston, you have to register like 9 months in advance almost. And I didn't really know what the elite field entailed. So to me, it was like, it's probably going to be women all running under 230, like low 220s. I didn't really know what it entailed. So I was like, you know, whatever. I know I'll have people to run with in the main field. So I'm just going to do this one. And then as it got closer, I talked to my college coach and I saw the times of the elite field and I was like, oh, maybe I should have done that. And he was like, well, you know, you could probably reach out and switch it. But I decided not to, because I wanted to just have a low pressure race. I've run under high pressure for so many years. I can do that just fine. But there is some of that beauty in just showing up and nobody knows who you are and nobody's paying attention. I haven't had that very many times. And it's really invigorating when you can have those experiences. So to me, I knew I would run well with either field, but it's like, you know, let's just have the full Boston Marathon experience, do what everyone else is doing and just be more lighthearted about it. And then the last, really, I realized would kind of be a benefit as it got closer is that the elite field is pretty small. And so over the course of 26 miles, you're going to spread out, might be by yourself. And with, I had men around me the entire race. And that was incredibly helpful to have that I might not have had in the elite field. So it ended up working out quite well, but I truly just had a blast getting to do that and not having the eyes on me.
I think you made a great choice, especially given how many times you've been on the other side of that coin. Did you run 2:36 in your first marathon? Did I get that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, which is amazing and great for a debut, but you know, you ran 2:30 in Boston, way harder course, right? Cause I'm sure Boston, and it's a huge drop. You know, you chopped 6 minutes off already, and I know you have bigger goals, and I'm excited. I'm pretty sure you're going to get there in time. But I think you made a great choice for all the reasons. You'd run in Boston proper before. You'd run on the BAA team. So you know what those roots are. You know what that race means in that community. But you still hadn't run Boston before, right? So it's still, you know, to get that experience and to have, you know, the elite women's field, elite men's field, they're small, just like you said. I mean, I just had Sydney DeVore on. She was the last guest. You know, you ran almost virtually identical times. I think you ran 2:30:52. She ran 2:31:08. So if you started in the same field together, you undoubtedly would have been sharing a ton of miles together. Well, I shouldn't say that. I have to look at her first half split and second half split in yours. But my guess is you would have definitely seen each other for a significant.
We would have crossed paths. Yeah.
It would have been impossible not to. But yeah, I think in this instance, you know, being able to have, you know, pressure off, you know, just let it roll. And then, you know, kind of be more in the mainstream crowd race. I bet you got more action from the crowd being where you were than if you were just in the smaller elite women's field. Because like you said, you're rolling through in these packs with three other ladies, two other ladies, maybe four. And then there you are, you're rolling with the 617 bib. And here she is blasting up and down the hills. Like they must have been giving you some serious love out there.
Yeah, it was really fun with that. Part of it was having the 617, definitely had a lot of shout outs from that. But it was also a lot of women really excited to see the first woman coming with all the sea of men from the regular crowd. So that was pretty fun too.
Yeah, I mean, hey, that's a big deal. You're the first woman in the mass field, the main field. And I think, were you 21st overall? Was that your place overall or some? Am I getting that part
wrong? I want to say 22nd.
22nd, okay.
I think it was 22nd, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, just amazing. And I know from what I read, the Fast Woman profile piece, which is great. I really enjoyed reading that and learning some more about you. Some of the challenges that you're not mentioning, you know, you're mentioning the positives and the focus on, you know, running and enjoying it and the gratitude, but it's a lot harder. You don't have bottles, you know, you don't have that available to you. And that's a big deal. So you have to get water and Gatorade and gels like all of us running in the main race. And that is a big deal, particularly, you know, when you get to the later stages of the race. And if I remember correctly in the profile, you know, you were definitely struggling the last couple of miles. Everyone does, newsflash. But, you know, you're feeling it a little bit in those last couple of miles. And I'm not saying, hey, you would not have struggled those last couple of miles. No one knows. I mean, I don't think anybody knows if you had Morton or, you know, whatever your drink of choice is, you know, out there on those tables mixed with whatever you would want to mix it up in, you know, but it definitely, it's something to look at on the positive side for you in the future that you ran that well. You know, sure, you had some men to roll with and you had some people cheering for you, but you didn't even have bottle service out there. So you got to feel good about that, right?
Yeah. It does. Like every marathon I run, I think it's going to get like, I'm going to uncover what more I can do to improve. And some of it's just experience too. You don't want to go out your first marathon and totally miscalculate pace and bomb it. But I, the very first marathon I ran, there was like some pretty bad errors with the water stations. And so I went like miles 16 to 21 or something with no water at all. And it was like 65 and sunny. And so that once I got to Boston, I remember being on the course and thinking like, wow, this is so organized. This is great. I know there's going to be water when I get there. And I mean, truly, my strategy is like thus far, probably won't have to encounter this again in the future for quite some time, hopefully. But like, I would just get pretty much every water station because you can only get a sip from it. You can get, you know, maybe a couple tablespoons. So the last 3 miles, I had pretty bad leg cramps. Some of it, I think, is just purely it was my second marathon on a really hard course. And you can do so much strength work, but like just time and experience adds up. And then secondly, like I was most likely dehydrated at that point too.
Yeah. I mean, look, any electrolyte drink replacement and, you know, Gatorade is the drink on the tables. But again, you know what those cups are like. I'm holding my fingers up. They're that big. And if they have 4 ounces in them when they're filled, they sure as hell don't, you don't even get close to 4 ounces of it down. Half of it's on your shirt or your jog bra. Sometimes it hits me in my contact lens. I mean, I've had some weird shit happen in 74 marathons, but trust me, most of the time it is not just going down your mouth where it's supposed to go. So, but you make the best of it, man. It's all good. And gels, you know, they're going to fall in the course. Sometimes we're dropping them. We don't have as many as we intend to take. And again, that's not a decision that you would normally have to be worrying about having bottle service, because whether you tape your gels to your bottles and, you know, you certainly could put one in your shorts or in a jog bra or something, but, you know, you'll have that thought out when you run the trials. You'll have that thought out in the next marathon that you take on. And, you know, you'd have more salt, more potassium, more magnesium, all of those things that could potentially, and look, man, I don't care what you're drinking or what your fueling is. Boston can cause anybody to get cramps. It just can. It's just the way the course lays out, the way, and everybody thinks it's all down. It's not all down. It's just so rolling. It's rolling, rolling, rolling like a roller coaster so much. And then you go uphill, you know, from the time you hit the firehouse. And then when you bomb down the hill in Cleveland Circle, by that point, man, your calves are pretty much crushed beyond belief. And then, you know, you're trying your best if you have anything left for those last 4+ miles, you know, when you kind of swing around the bend there from Cleveland Circle. And, you know, I was reading something that you said you felt like you're running 10-minute mile pace or something. I was cracking up, you know, you were probably running at the most like six, high sixes or something. But it is funny how it might feel like that, right? Like when you're out there in the moment, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It truly felt when you've been running like around 5:30, 5:40 pace, and then you slow down by like an entire minute. It felt like a walk. And I was just, it was right at the end when the crowds are really picking up, and I was like, oh man, I feel like I'm not moving. But the crowds really helped. They got me through. I'll say that.
Yeah, they really do. I mean, what an insane finish to the race, too. I mean, you know, after you scale Heartbreak and you blast down Cleveland Circle, but, you know, it seems like you never get to the Sitco sign. I mean, I've run Boston 11 times. It seems like you just never get there. You just keep thinking you're going to see it on the left and it's just not there. You're like, it's got to be here. Then it's finally there. And then it seems like it takes like forever to get from there to that stupid downhill ramp before you have to come up and run that hill before you get to go right, left and get to the finish. And I still contend that it's the longest. I don't care what it measures out to. It feels like it's 3 times longer to get to the end from when you turn onto Boylston, at least for me. But then again, I'm not running the pace that you are. It had to feel pretty amazing, you know, getting close to the finish line, because you must have run a ton of miles around there, you know, from your past time there, you know, running with the BAA team. I mean, did you have a lot of like local friends and support on the course from when you're training, when you were there with the team, and just people that were out there, friends and family? What was that like?
Yeah, I did have, so I was on the team with Erica Kemp and she was running. So that was cool to have, you know, she had her first debut. And then I have some college teammates that are in the area. Both my parents came and then my husband was there as well. And then there were a few people along the course that I didn't know they lived in Boston or were in town. And so had had several people there too. And we also have my company Dream Fuel. We have a lot of clients in Boston. And so I believe there were some out on the course cheering as well.
Oh, nice. It's nice that you had multiple levels of support. And yeah, anytime you pass friends and family out there, especially the ones you're not expecting, they're the ones that give you the real boost. You know, it's one thing when you see your husband or your girlfriend or, you know, your mom or somebody, but, you know, when you get that unexpected person out there that gives you a loud blast and, you know, cheers for you out of nowhere, and you're just like, whoa, who's that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, okay. All right, man. And so you finish up, you roll, you have a great race, you have to be like thrilled. And then just 19 days later, you go back to Indy and just absolutely drop a huge half marathon PR, 111.31, which is, you know, epic. I mean, 19 days, that's very tight turn. I've done stuff like that. I know other runners do. Other runners like to give themselves more time in between. I just think it depends on how quickly people recover. I think it's super cool that you went out and tried to go and blast another fast race. And that's kind of close to where you live, right? Where the Indy half is that more or less pretty close, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty close.
Cool. So you had hometown support again, I'm assuming. You had people out there in the course rooting and cheering
for
you.
Yeah, some of my college teammates were in it, were running too. And so that was really neat. And just a lot of, Indy has a pretty good hub of elite runners. And so there were a lot of just familiar faces at the starting line too, which was really, really cool.
Cool. And what was that race like? You know, I know you ended up winning it, but was it close? I mean, were you in a pack with people? Was it, you know, how did it play out? How did the race play out for you?
Yeah, I went into it knowing, I knew what the course record was, and I knew, like, I'm in the type of shape to do that. It's going to be more so a question of how recovered are my legs and is there someone to pace me and such. So I knew probably like within the first couple miles, I was like, I don't feel comfortable trying to pick up, like go for a record pace, just because it, knowing the way I felt, I was like, I don't want to completely bonk the blast, similar to Boston. I was like, I don't want that same experience the last few miles. So I toned it out just a little bit with the intent of picking it up. But I had people to run with pretty much the whole race, I would say. I didn't have any women around. I believe the second place woman was maybe like a 73 or 72.30, right around there. But there were people around during it. And the way this half works is you run like just through Indianapolis, through the city, and then you get to the Motor Speedway. And for anyone in Indiana, the Motor Speedway is a really big deal. So I thought it was awesome to get to run on it. It's like just a giant oversized track, and it's completely flat, and it wasn't windy that day. So that was pretty amazing to get to be in there. And then I was mentally, it's like, all right, I feel good. I'm going to be picking it up. I can still get that record. I'm like ready to shave off some seconds the second half. And then it was a little bit of limitation with the legs again. And I think mostly recovery wise. So to be expected, I didn't have it on the books going into Boston. I wanted to do a half marathon beforehand and then couldn't do that with just like a hip issue, not an injury, but like I was not in a place to race a half marathon. So I didn't get to do it beforehand, and then found out, I think 2 weeks before Boston, that there was this half roughly 2 weeks later. And to me, I'm like, man, if I'm training for like 4+ months for this marathon, I'd love to run more than one race. So it was just a bonus round for me. I went into it with that mentality of I'm going to run really hard. I know I'm in great shape. Let's just see what I can do and get experience racing it. So going down the final straightaway was really fun, just to hear the excitement of the crowd. And there was since I was the first woman, I had a cyclist with me the entire time. So he was cheering me on. And then it was really special to be from Indiana and win that one. I didn't realize how many people actually follow it. Like, you know, running, sometimes people follow the major ones. But a lot of times I feel like local communities aren't super in tune with what's going on in the running world. Maybe like, you know, we have the Colts, we have the Pacers, people are pretty involved in that. And so I was just shocked that so many people were like reaching out that I didn't know it. My husband's friends and his coworkers. There was a lot of excitement around that, which was honestly the most special part of it. It was, of course, it's fun to win. Of course, it was like, I'm super happy I got a PR. That was really fun. But it was really neat to just see the community get really excited about a local person winning.
Yeah. I mean, it just totally enhances it in every way for the spectators, for the announcers, for the kids that are out there in the course, like they are in Boston. Just, you know, you're local, man. That's big time. And, you know, college and, you know, you've stayed, you know, more or less, you know, kind of close to home, which is really neat. And, you know, for them to be able to be part of that experience with you was definitely even more significant. And to come back and then get the W, you know, and get the course record. I mean, that's a, you know, huge, huge bonuses for sure. So all trending in such a positive direction. What are you thinking about now? Are you just like in a full on, take some time recovery mode, just really, you know, easing back now and like on a take some time in between cycles and then, you know, put your thought to some fall racing before the trials, which I think are February 3rd, right? So, because I know you've got to be building some sort of plan around how you want to be, you know, at your best, you know, your optimal self for that. So what kind of, have you put some thought into it at this point and like what your plan will be?
Yes. Yeah. So I currently not registered for Chicago, but I didn't realize when the registration window closed, unfortunately. So I'm in the works of hopefully getting into Chicago. That would be the biggest one. And then a half before that. And then I'd like to do another half before the trials, like sometime early January or late December. But right now I'm taking a little bit of time. I'm still running, but keeping it easy. Cause after Boston and then that half marathon and just the months of training, I could definitely feel it in my body. Got a plantar issue that I've had this whole buildup. So trying to really focus now when I have the time to just get everything as strong and healthy as possible before this next buildup.
So smart. Because those little things, as we know, turn into bigger things.
Yes.
Not always huge things. Sometimes they just kind of flare away or go away, but Why not address them now? And those are two really, really big efforts close together. And yeah, that's going to pay off and pay dividends. But yeah, give yourself some time. And the other cool thing is you can focus on the athletes you're coaching and, you know, your other, you know, your mindset work, you know, that you're doing with, you know, your other clients. So, you know, you have a couple of other things that you can do to maybe, I would think, would probably help fill the cup for you, because helping other people is just about as cool as kicking ass for yourself, right? It's got to feel almost as good, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I hear like the high school runners I coached having a PR qualifying for state, I'm like just so elated the rest of the day. It's yeah, I feel like I might even get more excited for them sometimes than myself.
Yeah. I mean, come on. It's a big deal. So I'm going to hit you with a couple of the basic questions I ask everybody on the show. You know, you've ran for Notre Dame, storied institution, great in every possible way. I mean, academically, athletically, just amazing. And of course, you know, Catholic boy, altar boy, you know, always gotta love the fighting
awesome.
Irish. So, you know, and my son went to a Catholic high school and all. So, you know, just super, super awesome stuff. Did you have like a key mentor or a key coach? And it doesn't have to be a running coach. Could have been a professor, you know, somebody who you really connected with at Notre Dame who influenced you, you know, somebody who impacted you, that you think of.
Yeah, that's a great question. Man, the community at Notre Dame was just outstanding in anywhere you went, whether it was academic help or, you know, a professor or an advisor or something, or going to I mean, we had, you have chapels and dorms. You can go talk to a spiritual advisor if you needed to. But we, the community around athletics too, the athletic trainers, the, even our athletic directors, Jack Shorbrick is, he really does care about all the athletes, and it's, you don't find that everywhere. But if I were to say one, it would be Coach Sparks. And it's because when you're recruited as a high school athlete, you would love to believe that you're going to get everything that they say. You know, it's like any salesman, right? That's really what college recruiting is. They're selling you on the university, and it's sometimes you don't get all that. But like, I can say hands down, I got exactly what he was talking about. And he values the athlete as the person before the athlete as like the number on the scoreboard and the time and everything. And when you take that approach, it's going to help people run better, because if they're not mentally well, because of all these other things, you know, maybe you're super stressed about 5 exams or your boyfriend broke up with you or something. If you're really stressed about that, you're not going to run well. And if Notre Dame's a really hard school too, and he really did take that approach of like, let's care about you as a person and, you know, scale that to running. And he's a great coach, a running coach in and of itself too. But to coach female distance runners, you have to be more than just good at writing running workouts. So I would definitely say Sparks.
Awesome. Your running resume is, again, it's be hard to have a more amazing running resume at this point for just as young as you are in your career. But if you had to pick one running moment or one race moment that you feel has like shaped you, what would you say?
I'm not going to say Boston because it's so recent. But I will say that one was incredibly special because of just what I had been through leading up to it and getting to go back to Boston. But the other biggest one that stands out to me would have been winning Foot Locker my senior year of high school, because I had won 2 years prior and then broke both of my feet and was in a wheelchair my junior year of high school. And wasn't sure, even with surgery, I think it was like a 75% chance that it wouldn't break again. And so, you know, that's pretty good, but there's a 25% chance in there that it will. And so to be able to come back from that, just knowing how mentally difficult it was, as well as just physically months of trying to cross train and get stronger and all these things while you're not actually racing and seeing any progress. But just having that belief that this was what I'm supposed to be doing and it's not time to give up now. To see all of that work and all of those beliefs and personal growth and everything come together on that day was just, unforgettable experience, but it was amazing. Of course, amazing to like win a national championship. That's like hard to surpass that one. But to do it just with the context of everything leading up to it was just a very, very special moment.
Awesome. Drive, energy, spirit. You have it in spades. Competitiveness, fire. Where do you think it comes from?
I think so much of it, like, I mean, probably closest to my mom. Not that my dad's not this way, but my mom is a little bit more stubborn on like, if someone tells her she can't do it, then she just has to do it. And I definitely carry that trait. And I think that's why distance running compared to other sports or endurance sports in general, I used to swim competitively as a kid as well. And there was, of course, natural talent plays into this, but the level of self-motivation and just like pure discipline and drive you have to have for endurance is, I think, what I thrive off of. Like, I care a lot more about competing against myself and like the standards I have than necessarily beating the other people. So I want, you know, I do want to beat them. I do want to win, of course. But to me, it's like, I don't care if I won, if I like didn't try as hard, you know, if I ran 30 seconds slower and just like, you know, jogged in the last mile and won, I could never do that. It's that inner competitiveness against myself that really drives it.
Love it. How about mantras or like mindset during a race? Do you use mantras like self-talk while you're out there or even during like tough workouts?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I've been using them since high school, but I also in my full-time job as a mental performance coach for business professionals and young athletes, this is always a topic of conversation. What I usually turn to though is I'm Christian, raised Catholic, and I oftentimes turn to Bible verses. Honestly, there are so many great ones in there for empowering you in tough moments. And so those are ones that I've known since I was a kid. And so they're ingrained in my mind. It's not like I have to think hard about what I'm going to say. But to me, that's what really helps in the hardest moments. It's not as much like you're strong, you can do this. It's like, no, what else am I doing this for? What else? What's the bigger reason that I'm trying to keep running this pace, even though I'm super tired? So that's really what goes through my head at the tough moments.
Love it. So my personal mantra, not just for running in life, is the sign right behind me. I don't know if you can see it with the Boston medals draped over there, but it's stay in the fight. So my question is, your stay in the fight moment. It doesn't have to be from a race. It could be from some really challenging part of life or maybe something with the family or what you were just telling me about your running. It could go back to there. But do you have like a stay in the fight moment, something you're really proud of, like overcoming or battling through?
I would still probably use that high school example for Foot Locker because I just really had this feeling in me that it was something I needed to see through, and no one would have blamed me if I stopped then. Like, you know, you're 16, you broke both of your feet. Sure. That's okay. You can stop. But I knew it was something to keep going through. And the way that has been able to be used for so much more good in the future has just uncovered itself so much throughout the years. So that to me was that if like I had the feeling I know I should keep doing this, but then to see it come like full circle in a lot of different ways. And then years, like I said, years down the road of being able to be that mentor, be that voice for other people is the reminder of why I stayed in the fight. And then also why I want to continue to do so now when I face challenges.
Love it. So you're coaching other runners. How has that changed your outlook on running personally?
I think it forces me to practice what I preach. Like if I find myself getting really nervous about something, I'm like, I can't let that happen because this is, this is what I coach other people on. And it reminds me also just to go back to the basics at times when people are struggling with anxiety or confidence or race strategy. You know, I haven't had to think about race strategy as much as you do when you're first learning how to run a 5K. And so it does force me to really like dig into the why behind everything that I teach and everything that I do. And, you know, when I can remember that, it helps me prioritize what I need to do. And it helps me just keep the purpose behind each run and each workout and such.
Awesome. And do you have like, is there one, and it isn't easy, of course, you don't know I'm going to ask any of these questions, you know, before in advance, but is there anybody specifically maybe that you're working with? I know you're working with a lot of younger, like high school aged athletes, just from reading your coaching bio from the Instagram. Is there one, I mean, I'm sure there are many success stories, but is there one specifically that like you really feel like, wow, this was really neat. We worked together and we did this, like, you know, we figured something out together. Is there one that comes to mind?
Yeah, man, there's two girls, actually. They're both from North Dakota. Now I can't remember. It might be South Dakota. They're from the Dakotas. And they, one girl's now running at University of Minnesota. And she, I didn't train her during the season, but I helped her in the off season and structuring it so that she could get into track and like be fit, but not burned out. And she just went in and absolutely smashed it. A lot of PRs, state champion, running at Minnesota. And working with her, not just on the running, but also on the mental side of it, because they, in North, I think it's North Dakota, like I said, their winters are so bad. It's like, I mean, she'd run on the treadmill. She'd be doing hill repeats on treadmills, tempos on treadmills, for months on end. And the mental strength that she has from that is, that's going to get her through things. So it was just really amazing to see her at her state meet, having it all come together, getting to go to Minnesota and everything. And then there's also a girl I'm coaching right now who had some pretty big iron deficiencies that they figured out. And so we've been working together on structuring a training plan again throughout the winter, and then more so the mentoring now during the season to get her to, she ran her first PRs in 2 years and qualified for state. So it's, those are two that come to mind of just figuring out what works and seeing how happy they are.
Oh, both awesome. And, you can just, I can see from the look on your face how meaningful and fulfilling it is. Helping others is a great one. And it leads into my last question, which was my favorite one, is community service, something that you're doing to give back to help others. And obviously your coaching and your coaching service is doing that. But is there any other type of community service that you're engaged in, or maybe even did when you were at Notre Dame, that you'd like to do more of to give back?
Yeah. So two things. My husband and I are just now in the process of fully onboarding for Big Brothers Big Sisters, in a national organization, but in Indianapolis. And I think we just got word today actually that we might have been matched with someone, but that's a way for us to mentor a child that might not have the best home life or the best economic circumstances, and just be a positive influence in their life. And so my husband's done it. Nick has done it for several years before. This is my first time, but it's something we can do together. So I'm really looking forward to that. And the other one is the St. Vincent de Paul Society. I haven't been able to go as much as I would like, but that's one that's kind of near to my heart for a variety of reasons. But that's one that I would like to do more in the future.
Fantastic. And I love that you're doing it together, you and your husband. That's great. Well, I'll tell you, Anna, it's been really fun getting to know you and having this chat together and learn more about you. Your running is amazing. What you're doing on the coaching side, working with younger kids to help them stay healthy and hit goals. And then the mindset stuff, your business practice is really neat stuff, really interesting stuff. And I'm sure it's going to help your own running as well. Is there anything I didn't get to, like something maybe you wanted to say, or I always say maybe like a last message you want to leave for the Run Chats audience, something to leave them with?
Yeah. The last thing that I would say is just practice patience. Whether you're brand new to running or you've been running for many years, at some point in time, we often face some type of an injury or a slump or, you know, natural life stages of life changes, and the patience within that, just being able to keep a long-term focus, really eases some of the stress, eases some of the anxiety. It's a lot easier said than done, but if you can cultivate that patience, it really opens up so many doors for what you can do in the future if you just stay patient and trust that it's going to come together someday.
Sage advice and a great place to land it. It's been super fun talking to you, Anna. And as I say at the end of every podcast, we tell all the runners to keep lacing them up, to keep getting out the door, and always remember to stay in the fight. Wow, Anna is one inspiring runner and all around person at that. I just get so excited to talk to professional runners, particularly someone at such a young age like her, who's just a few years post-collegiate at this point, who's really focused on giving back and trying to help other runners that are facing challenges that she battled herself as a top high school and collegiate runner with injuries, sharing her wisdom on nutrition, how to train, and also really how to stay healthy as these high school runners, many of them that she's working with, are trying to get an opportunity to run for a top college like she did. And so much of it is being able to be consistent and be out there regularly. And, you know, her sharing her wisdom and her experiences with others is just a wonderful way to give back. And it's really exciting to see someone who had just so much remarkable success, such a storied resume as a high school and collegiate runner. Gotta love a little shout out to Notre Dame, of course, as well. But she had to overcome a lot, man, an awful lot, and figure out a bunch of things as well along the way about how she was running, how she was training, and in the end of the day, what was going to work for her best. So coaching herself, staying away from the track, changing up her approach to training, and kind of rewiring her running patterns, all of it is certainly leading to big success. And I know she's got a lot more in the tank. So can't wait to see what she does with her fall running leading up to the Olympic trials. I'm sure she's going to do some pretty special stuff. So I hope you all are inspired by this listen. Anna is an amazing runner. Certainly give her a follow. If you're a younger athlete and you're looking for a coach, definitely I will tag up links to her coaching page as well. Give her a follow on both sides and see what she's up to with her running and what she's going to be doing from here going forward. Exciting stuff. So I wish you all well and luck with your upcoming races, surviving the summer heat. We have this crazy forest fires from Canada affecting the air quality all along the eastern seaboard. I think it's even gone out west as well, or Midwest. So stay healthy, run indoors if you need to. Do what you got to do and make it through the summer miles, which are always a grind for all of us. The fall racing season will be here before you know it, my friends. So keep lacing them up, keep getting out the door, and always remember to stay in the fight. Peace out, my friends.